podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap. I am Neil Atkinson. I've got Rob Gutman, Paul Senior and Amelia Bonner here with me. Download the app this week for loads of fantastic stuff before Paris and maybe some fantastic stuff looking back at Wolves, if that is indeed possible. We will test the premise of this right now. Somewhat bleary-eyed after what became a late one, because obviously if you want to win big, Rob, you have to be prepared to lose big. Not my words, the words of the Liverpool manager, Jurgen Klopp. He was very clear on that post. Match, you knew exactly what he was saying. Were you prepared and able to win big? Were you ready to lose big?
The words of Shaken Stevens, yeah, to quote the man. It's a good question. That I certainly found out what it means to lose big again. Do you know what I mean? We haven't lost big. I don't think we've lost big for quite a while. So that was a bit of a return to a feeling I hadn't experienced. It's the classic, a taste of honey. Is a taste of honey worse than a talk? Actually, no. In the cool light of day, I'm glad it went mad and went big. It's a day I will never forget as a Liverpool supporter, and I suppose that's good in a bad way. In some ways, I felt a pain which was very, very profound for me. Well, a bit like, you know, we've talked about great pains, like the Mark Viduka four-goal pain.
Yeah.
But this was a big pain.
That was, I'll just come back to you on that, because what occurred to me last night through the haze of many a drink was it was the first time we've been knocked out of anything since March 2021. It was the first time that something, you know, other than maybe just how we felt possibly after the Leicester game this season, it was the first time it felt like something had been taken from us, something that we could achieve had been taken from us. Because after March 2021, we qualified for the Champions League, which felt like it was a major achievement, and it laid the groundwork for all of this. And it just sort of hit me there, what you were saying there about sort of losing big. It is the first time we felt defeated in any way, shape or form since then, and we won the game.
It's a strange one. I didn't feel defeated in that sense, and it only was this morning that it actually occurred to me that we couldn't win the quadruple, and I felt another sort of wave of sadness at that, at the loss of the quadruple as an entity in its own right. What I felt was that we were in sight of achieving something I didn't think possible. I haven't priced in my own happiness for quite a while. Because, look, you go back to January, we're 14 points adrift, it's two games in hand. You do not think you're going to win the league. You know, you and I said, well, nobody gives this up. There's a long way to go. And as we pull them in, you're enjoying not the prospect that you're actually going to win it. You're enjoying the fact that you have pulled yourself back into even being able to talk about this and the pride that that brings. And I was content that we were going into that day, walking into Anfield, that pride had been restored. The likelihood was we finished just a point behind them. We competed to the last day. The bigger fish was to fry in the week to come. It was sound. I mean, we'd all daydreamt and made little jokes. Go, imagine we actually won the league today. And we'd all had that little thought. And I think we'd all sort of projected into what that would feel like and then pushed it back down because it wasn't going to happen. But for a good half an hour there, maybe less, maybe more, I thought, we're going to do this. We're going to fucking do this. Jesus wept, we're going to do it. And, you know, we anxiety beyond belief because we hadn't actually done our side of the bargain. Mm. But it was most exciting thing. I think one of the most top five exciting moments I've been around with Liverpool and football. And actually one of the only times I think I felt that way and it not turn out well. Mm. So it's terrible pain, but also a sense that pride doesn't even cover. I don't know what covers. I'm still processing this.
Still processing.
It's a weird answer, I know.
Oh, go on, Amelia.
I just think what was really telling was that when you talk about it, we talk about it as it being kind of like it's the hope that springs eternal, and that it was an outside chance, and we all thought, oh, imagine if it happened. But walking through town when I was going to the place where I was watching it, what struck me was how up for it everyone was. There were so many people that had come into the city who normally wouldn't have otherwise to watch the match because they truly believed that there was a chance that it was going to happen, and it did feel at several points like it really could happen. And I think what Damien said on the post-match show yesterday was right, that I think winning the quadruple is impossible. That doesn't mean I don't think that we'll do it one day. I think it's beyond the realm of possibility of just human capability of what you can ask anyone to achieve, that you don't fluff at least one of them, that something doesn't go wrong along the way. And yet we got that close. We got the closest anyone has ever gotten. And I truly believed it was going to happen at several points. And I think that speaks volumes that there was no point where I think if they had the chopper with a trophy on in the IKEA car park in Warrington and they were trying to decide which way to send it, I don't reckon that it was taken off until the whistle goes at the Etihad. Like, I don't believe anyone thought it was over until it was properly over.
I think you're, about 18 minutes away from it, aren't you? Mm. I mean, I said to the guys around me in the ground yesterday, this is truly horrible.
Yeah.
You know, and it really was. And the thing I was then dealing with, a 2-0 to Aston Villa, was, oh, wow, we're going to fluff our lines here.
That's what I was thinking. I was trying that one in.
That was the pressure, and I don't think we helped, by the way. I thought the crowd was good in general, yeah. But you can almost see why we won the league when we went in the ground. You know, the pressure on the players was unreal. And you could... I kept thinking about Chelsea 13-14 and our own behaviour on that day in terms of panicking. And I was like, no, it's that doubt is to believe us thing. No, it'll come for Liverpool here. And it does. I don't think anyone had told Mo Salah that things had changed.
I don't think the players knew.
No, I don't.
The players didn't know. And that, for me, Paul,
I think maybe they learned to the reaction to the Salah goal because it was a bit flat.
No, I think that they basically find out that City have come back. I think at the moment when they're all around the crowd at that end of the pitch,
why aren't you going mad?
Salah thinks he's won the league for Liverpool, that is but to me that's a massive positive in that you talk about the pressure. The players get the goal winning game, the game winning goal at a moment, I think, where the pressure couldn't be on more.
Yeah.
They come through, you know, they come through that challenge, they come through the worst case scenario, which would have been they've dropped points and we drop points. They live through that. Mm. I think they think we've just won the league here.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it's cripplingly sad on the one hand, that, as far as I'm concerned, but on the other hand, it's speaks volumes about the character of these footballers.
Absolutely, they found a way, you know, and I'm sad for us, but I'm extremely sad for them. You know, Mo Salah doesn't celebrate like that. Mo Salah, you know, Mr. Image Rights, knows what he's doing with a celebration, whether it's a little yoga stance for Vodafone or whatever it is he's up to at the time. He's calculated. He loses his mind, and
he goes.
I
goes mad.
I didn't understand at the time because I sort of thought that they must know. So I thought, why is he fucking celebrating? I thought, is it the Golden Boot? Is it Mo? But obviously not. I mean,
it's not.
For a brief second,
he also doesn't know what Son's doing. He can understand that City are ahead or behind, but he can't really know. What
unless he's got a little AirPod on with the Tottenham match in, you know. But no, listen. I think even Mo isn't that much of an individualist, you know. And it was lovely to see. And I think if you look at there's a photo knocking round
of Mo with the trophy.
There's so much sadness in his eyes.
He's cried.
He's definitely cried. And that, do you know what that means the world to me as well? That Mo cares just as much as we did.
I think on your point on the players, Paul, I'll come back to you on it. I think in a sense, arguably more, I felt after the Tottenham game, the crowd was in better nick than a lot of the footballers. And I thought the same, even all the way up to the lap of honour.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I think the crowd was in, it's all right, this lads. You know, and I thought that was a really positive thing. The crowd was like, it's all right, this boys, don't worry at all. You've given absolutely everything. But I think they, as the elite professionals they are, I think they were hollow inside by the end of it.
Mm. I think that the crowd is such an interesting point because we were talking about it on Sunday Best beforehand, how it felt for when we played Wolves again, the last game of the season, 18-19, and how it kind of, you could see the impact it was having on the players on the pitch, and it almost felt a bit unfair on them. Jordan Henderson has said that as well, and I know it's such like an exercise in counterfactual history to try and do, but if you think about what happens if City hear through their fans that Liverpool have just gone 2-1, that's where we are. If they start hearing it before they start getting more and more and more goals in that fight back because it happens in a very short space of time, but you know that if you're Man City, you're only human. It's got to have an impact if you're then hearing that at the Etihad, the feeling of Liverpool are fighting, like Liverpool have scored again and it's happening and it's on and they are currently winning the league and we're not. I know you can't rewrite history, but the crowd has such an impact on it that you can't help but wonder what happens if that Salah goal happens before one of the City goals.
Yeah, I think you look at the crowd points, Rob, is you've got to sort of embrace the reality of it. Mm. Liverpool supporters were going to be excited if Manchester City conceded goals. That was just always going to happen and it was always going to kick onto the crowd. I think it's one of the reasons why the game's a bit weird. I think it must be exceptionally difficult to play in. But one of the things that, on the sort of the counterfactual point, there's something which I quite like, which is I quite like one of these to be completely defined by us. Mm-hmm. Can we please go into one of them top? Do you know what? Because then it's your final. And I think this isn't like a final for Liverpool. It's like a final for Manchester City.
Yeah.
They know if they win, they get the cup.
Yeah.
We know that if we win, we still need something to happen somewhere else. Yeah. And it would be great to have one of these where we go into a top, please. Mm. Because I think we'd have absolutely just steamrolled Wolves in that scenario. I think what's difficult, because then you don't care what's happening at Manchester City. If you're just watching a game and Liverpool win, they win the league. We'll focus on this, please. But I think it's really hard, and it must be so hard for those players as well, because they're only human. And there's this thing they can control, and there's this other thing they can't control.
I've experienced Anfield where we needed to win at Anfield to win the league. And I've experienced the opposite of it, but generally Anfield steps up and you feel very comfortable and we're in control of the situation. I mean, there's a big exception to that rule
in
1989, but there's different circumstances around that. But yeah, I agree with what Paul was saying, though. I although by the end, I think you're right, Neil, that Anfield is at peace with what's happened, and we all are in a different way. We've all got a range of emotions about it. We're at peace. We're certainly not critical. We certainly don't think there's a sense of failure. And the massive thing about that is that game in hand we talked about, that we have the greatest game in hand you can have, a European Cup final. Absolutely. To come. Yeah. So that contextualises everything here. But there's that moment where it's at 1-1 and they go one down, don't they? Mm. And Anfield is as febrile as I've ever heard it, and too fucking febrile, because for 5 minutes, it's everyone around me, people are going nuts. Like they're willing something that it's not fair to will. Yeah. It's different in Chelsea and Barca. We're in front, right? When Anfield goes that wild, we're in front and proper. But at that stage, Liverpool needed the enthusiasm, but they needed a bit more calm from the crowd. And I'm not criticising the crowd, because people were out of control. They were losing their minds. But it created one of the most stunning things I've experienced in a sports stadium, or Anfield as it's called.
I think it felt so much more unlikely, though. Do you know what I mean? As in, it felt so much more unlikely that Villa were going to go 2-0 up against City. It just felt beyond the realm of possibility. So when it did happen, there was more... We knew that we could put that performance in against Wolves, but it just felt like you were wishing for something that was impossible to happen, and it suddenly was happening, and it happened for a really long time, actually.
The whole thing was really unreal because, as Paul says, us not doing our bit for so long of that game.
That was the abyss.
That was the only abyss for me.
The idea that they lost and we drew was the absolute abyss. And I don't think I personally quite hit the point where I thought that would be the case. I always thought there was something in it there for us, on our bit. But you know, I was very calm in the ground all the way through. I was beginning to lose myself a little bit on about 82, and then we get the goal. The other thing about the goal is, it's a proper scrambled goal. It's a really wild goal to score. You know, it's everyone keeping the ball alive over and over and over again. Yeah. In a way,
this is what they win the league.
Well, exactly, and it's why they all thought they were winning the league. That's the sad thing. They at that point, they all think we're winning the league here. That's what they think.
On 70, I was busy doing my compensatory betting like a motherfucker. I don't even want to talk the numbers I got into there. But there's some new highs and lows. But we were, I think, five or six to one, something like that, before kickoff to win the Football League. Mm. By half time, we were getting perilously close to evens, or we were 7-5 or something like that, and they were only just odds on. On about, let's call it 73, although we were struggling to break Wolves down, I thought we were going to win the league. I thought I was going to go out of that ground. I didn't see City turning 2-3. I just didn't see that happening. That collapse is just unfucking believable.
That's the point I got to, is the 2-3 thing. So when it goes 2-0, I think at that time I've gone, oh wow, it's all on us now.
Can we do it?
Because it's that, isn't it? It's they don't have to level. They have to win. You know, and that's it.
Three goals
in 15 minutes
against an opponent that's done well here.
And City hadn't. And I was I'm not sure if this is completely right, but there was people in the ground saying around half time that they hadn't had a shot on target, City, and that they were poor. And at 2-0, I'd sort of gone to my phone then, which I tried to avoid as much as I possibly could. And I was looking. I was going, like, how is City playing? The report was appallingly, you know, and I was like, oh wow, the pressure has finally got to them, because in this
exactly
the absolute respect that's shown between both clubs is, wow, you win, we win, you win, we win, and we respect that. And pressure never got to them ever, and we see that in the 97-98 point thing, it finally happened. Villa were going to at least get a draw in the way that West Ham managed to the week before when they'd gone 2-0 down. That 7 minutes from 75 to 82 at Man City is unbelievably bad. I had the real misfortune of watching it last night. I don't know why I did it. I always need closure for these things. So I watch KF, I watch Chelsea 13-14. I always have to see what happened for my own mental state. It's madness. It's absolute madness from Aston Villa to that point. They are doing so well, Villa. And just the minute the ball touches Gundogan's head to go in for 2-1, you know it's 3-2.
That's the crucial difference when you've got an opponent. You know, there's this classic thing we've talked about for all our football watching lives is you're playing someone with nothing to play for. What does that actually mean? Mm-hmm. Actually, it's unfair on the one sense in that a team wants to win, especially once on the last day for a variety of reasons. And Gerrard set the stall as to why they did want to win. They want to win until they can't be asked, or until it just seems like a bit of graft. And they don't mentally make that decision, but subconsciously, when that first goal goes in, a team that if Villa needed a point to stay in the Premier League, I don't think they lose that 3-2.
Absolutely not. And it was absolute capitulation from Villa. But the thing that annoyed me about them was I've seen Villa twice this season, and it's the goalkeeper, you know.
The goalkeeper was injured, wasn't he?
Yeah, Martinez not being in goal. You know, Manchester United fans have given so much stick for the way he behaved at Old Trafford, winds them up. I don't know if you remember him pulling the face
at the
Stratford end and stuff. And he was doing it at Anfield, and you know, there's a playbook there, and he wasn't in goal, and there was no playbook to go to, and there was no Arlas in.
There was no find a way to turn a goal kick into 90 seconds, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and there was no one going down with cramp, and I talked about it on the show a couple of weeks ago. There was no fake head injuries. There was none of that, which we were seeing from these football clubs.
Because it didn't mean anything.
Because they just didn't care enough, and that was what's so annoying. If it wouldn't have been the last day of the season, or if there would have been something for Villa to go for, whether it's, you know, seventh place or something, I think they get over the line, but there's just nothing to fight for.
But in the past few fixtures that we've played, you've seen teams doing that to us. And I think teams, first of all, not letting us play football the way that we want to play football, but teams also just sitting deep, being our losses, Everton being the greatest example of it. And I know there are other factors behind that as well, but just shithousing their way through 90 minutes to try and stop us from getting what we want to achieve. And you just think, if you can't apply a little bit of that to the last game of the season, whether there's nothing in it for you or not, you get to be the team that stopped Manchester City winning the Premier League. Yeah. Why the fuck don't you want to do that? Why can't you bring yourself to just do a little bit of shithousery for 15 minutes to get it across the line?
I just think in 7 minutes, there's so much time you can rob.
Yeah.
You know, and they didn't rob 1 second. They didn't even... you know, let Man City go and celebrate or like take ages over a kickoff or nothing. It was just like, just use your head. If anything, just try and win the game for yourself. It's such a coup to beat Man City in a friendly. You know, never mind in a Premier League round on their own turf to deny them the title. And don't do it for your manager. Don't do it for Phil Coutinho or Danny Ings or whoever it may be. Just beat Man City, and that's my only. So I found a place of anger. And it's not with Man City. It's certainly not with Liverpool. It's them.
It's a very healthy place for it. I was sat in front. So where we were, there was a Aston Villa fan sat in front of us who had just accepted that the only way he was watching the match with anyone caring at all for him was by just doing it while the Liverpool game was on, and he had it on his phone and was the most popular lad in the entire room for that reason. And throughout it, he was just going, they're playing shit, you know, like, as everyone was kind of excited and amazed by the goals, and he just couldn't believe almost his luck that City were putting in such a tawdry performance for the first 65-70 minutes of it. And he was fully ready to be like carried aloft out of the place when we finally did it.
And as it is, you killed him.
And as it is, yeah,
Steph left his intestines spilled through the city, bathed in his blood,
so hanging by his feet from a lamp. That seemed harsh at the time. Can I just sound a note of pride and context here, because I thought I did a little mini statistical analysis for my own sanity, because the narrative is, I even saw Andy Robertson and Klopp saying, at the end of the day, well done to Man City, deserve champions, right? And I'm not going to get into the broader contextual narrative around Man City. There is a specific one, though. Is it January the 3rd we draw 2-2 with Chelsea? I think it is, right? At that point, we have 18 to play, they have 16 to play, and we are 14 points behind. In our 18 remaining league games, we win 16. 92% of the points on offer we take.
And the draws at Tottenham and Manchester City.
Yes, I'm almost prepared to put it online that if you call that an entire second half of a season, near as damn.
Well, no, if you include the Chelsea game, we played 19, won 16, drawn 3.
I would say you'll struggle to find...
All three of the teams have gone to the Champions League.
Yeah.
I think you'll struggle, in the history of the British game, pro rata to a 38-game season, you'll struggle to find a better performance by any side in the second half of the season, because most best halves have been where teams have steamrolled. City's 100-point season, they definitely don't achieve that in the second half of the season. I don't think we do in the second half of our 99-point season. So I think it's probably the finest second half of before league season ever in the history of the fucking game. That's point one, with a 92% thing. Man City, the deserved champions as they're being billed, because God knows they scored 3 to turn it around. You know what their points are? In the same period of time, they play 16 games. They take 47 points, I think it is, in that time. They take 72% of the points on offer. They drop points in 5 games out of 16. We drop two out of 18 games. Our point-getting rate is so much higher than theirs. And if you add in all the cups we've ploughed through while they've been knocked out. If there's one talk about who's the best team in the world, regardless of what happens in Paris next week, based on what they've done in... Where do you count that? Don't go back 2 years. A year's too long because the team can have... 5 months feels like a solid case for saying you're the best team in the world. Our performance rate has been absolutely stunning and consistent and way above theirs. So deserve champions?
Being in every final is the... And then achieving that is almost like the crown and glory, isn't it? So if you win every final you get into, which is obviously what we all want to do now, that's some going from in the calendar year.
It's virtually anomalous that... Out of the 4 trophies, they happen to have the league one. It's virtually anomalous in my mind in terms of one thing could have gone worse for us on one day and they might still be in the League Cup and we could have gone better for us another day. It's so fine, the margin. I don't even want to get into that thing that triggered Gary Neville on Twitter.
I think there's a thinly veiled message in that is the 3 draws that we get, Tottenham, Chelsea, Manchester City. I think if you want to win leagues, you've got to start winning your head-to-heads a little bit more.
You sort of say that, but to flip that on its head, if next season we... in the last 19, we win 16, we draw 3. If next season we win 32 and we draw 6, we'll win the league.
Yeah.
So I think that's, this is the
I just think you've got to make them count, haven't you? So they don't mean as much in the early season. You go, a draw with City at home, it's not so bad. I sort of feel there's pressure on them games from game one.
I think that's, for me, to really jump ahead and jump even beyond Paris. There's 16 games before the World Cup next year, and not many of our lads are actually going to go to the World Cup and go deep in the World Cup. And I'm all about those first 16. Liverpool put that run of form in, played 16, won 14, draw 2.
Who cares where they draw and go
to the World Cup, and you come back out of that, and the table when we get to Boxing Day, then we'll have Liverpool 1. Next to it, and Mo Salah's just had a lovely 6-week holiday.
Yeah, there's no reason he can't. If fit, he can play all 38 games next season, Salah, because he's going to get a pre-season twice.
Yeah,
in this calendar year, that's what makes him such an asset in going into next season and avoiding all the contract talk and whatnot. Mo Salah next season with 2 breaks, which I don't think he's had that in his whole time at Liverpool. Yeah. African Cup of Nations in season, whatever. Next season could be a very, very special season for Mo Salah.
And I think that's why, it's got to be a jumping off point in the same way it was in 18-19 into 19-20. And I want almost the same feeling when City drop points in game 2. It feels, like the whole thing is just extended. Let's just do it again then. Yeah. All right, Sam, let's just do it again. Looking forward to it, do it again. And that's the most important thing for me, is just do it again. But I think to do that, though, you've got to win in Paris. And that's where the Thiago injury is a massive blow.
Yeah.
We're going to move talking about that.
Okay. If you want me.
Well, I want to just finish on the point about form, because I think that's where you hit that 16-game thing. We've come out, so I don't even remember back to the time where Everton started being a good side in the mid-80s. They signified it by being the best side of the second half of the season, where we ended up winning the league. We've been the best side here, and City haven't been a close second to the best side. They've been a long, long way off it, and that's the thing that augurs well for me. But okay, Thiago.
And Paris.
Thiago and Paris. I'm factoring him as he's going to miss that, I think. We may just risk him on the bench, I think. Fabinho's situation worries me, but Jürgen said everyone's fit.
He said everyone else is back, didn't he? Like, very definitively.
I am slightly nervous, because I think it's a week to confess nerves and then to try and get confident about it. Yeah. I'm slightly nervous that we've got the likes of Fabinho, here's a slight fear I have, that the likes of a Van Dijk, a Salah and a Fabinho, because they've had these muscle injuries, and even a Thiago if he's wrist, that we could lose one or two before a 90's up if they start.
Yeah.
Just strain it. And how we finish that game, be it a 90 or 120 minute game, is a conversation worth having, because I think Mo Salah's felt a tweak. Can Mo Salah play 120 minutes? Well, obviously he'll play through on one leg if he has to. This is his last game of the season. But can he be effective for 120 minutes? It's a sort of conversation. Thiago, are we going to miss Thiago? I think yes. But we're a strong squad. I'd been I'd still pick Fabinho and Henderson ahead of Thiago, despite Thiago's genius at times. Thiago Henderson, for me, is Liverpool's most important midfielder. Unpopular opinion amongst a lot of our support, but for me, he's Liverpool's most important midfielder. But Fabinho's the next, and there's not much between them if you want to argue about it. Then, Naby Keita quietly, I mean, people will spot where maybe he doesn't track a run here or there, but I thought he had a good game yesterday. Anytime you make yourself tune into Naby Keita, and although I'm a fan, I don't often tune in properly to what he's doing. I go, oh my God, he's just won the ball back there. He's the one putting the most pressure on the opposition.
He was excellent yesterday.
Yeah, I thought he was, because I actually made myself watch him. Fucking hell, he is.
I know you're glass half full on Keita, but I've very much been glass half empty for a while, but not this season. I think he's been excellent. And I'm at a point now, and there's a caveat to this, where I'm all right with Keita, Henderson, Fabinho in the midfield. If Thiago's out, it's unfortunate, but I'm absolutely all right with that midfield. However, I just hope it's the real Fabinho. You know,
yes, I agree.
That's my only worry. Is yes, we can probably get Fabinho on the pitch, but what Fabinho are you getting on the pitch? Because I think he's had slow starts and coming back from injuries in the past. However, if he is any form of Fabinho, that's fine.
I think the rest might have done him a bit of good.
Yeah.
I think he's beginning to look at times.
Yeah, like he was definitely tired.
Yeah.
So if he can just treat this like he hasn't been picked for a couple of weeks and the injury wasn't so much, then I'm very, very glass half full on that midfield. There's another one to this as well. Is if Keita starts, and it is that three I've just mentioned, then great. James Milner has been magnificent the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. I don't know where he's found it from. At Newcastle, he was unbelievable. When he comes on in the cup final, he's fantastic. There's another game I'm missing, which I thought he was great, and I thought he was good when he came on. I was crying for Milner yesterday. When we seen Thiago was injured, and there was a bit of a, well, who will it be? Will it be Jones? Because we're chasing the game. I was like, the calm head of Milner is what was required here, and I felt I was right.
I don't think he's ruled out of the conversation for a start,
No, I don't either.
I think Keita would get the nod, but I wouldn't be surprised if Milner got the start, especially with the view of it looking like a long game, and you might go, well, he gets 60.
It's five subs, isn't it? Yeah. Into the 120 still.
I think he'd probably rather have Milner on the bench for the last 20 and the following 30 if it turns into that. Yeah.
I think he'd be looking for a Milner for Henderson sub if it goes 120, I would imagine.
He's moved himself up the pecking order in terms of he's the fifth midfielder now. He would say he might have been the eighth 2 months ago.
He's absolutely shown his value, and you know, there's the clip of him on the pitch that we've seen this season, and the talk. His value around the club is unquestionable. However, his value as a footballer throughout this season has been a bit like, are we just keeping him round because he's great around the club now? No, it's because he's still a great footballer.
What we see yesterday, Emilia, is Sadio Mane is currently magnificent. Two great finishes, one chalked off, but he doesn't know it. And the other
thing, neither did I for quite a while.
No, it was patently obvious that it was.
Yeah. It went off, and I was incandescent when showed it, and then went, yeah, fair play, it absolutely is.
So no one knew, man. Yes, very much so. The goal graphic was going, and everything in the crowd, everyone got right into it. No one knew, but it was there. He still has to finish it, and he does finish it. Mm-hmm. Also, it's massive that Salah scores.
Yeah,
scores a pressure goal as well. You know, I think that's something to Liverpool. I think will be better than Real Madrid. Liverpool got to take the chances to beat Real Madrid, and with Mane and Salah in this form in particular, or if Salah can get into the form that we know he's capable of, there's two there who are more than capable of getting a brace in it in a European Cup final.
I know it seems odd to say this given the result. Yes, the result is that we win, but given how things kind of turn out and the mood afterwards and how absolutely devastated they both look. But I think yesterday is really important for Salah, and I think his performance is really important. I know that you've said a bit, and I agree to a large extent, about kind of him not being the Salah that you want to see and not being the Salah that you recognise in recent fixtures, and I felt like yesterday was an important moment for him.
Yeah, he looked like Mo Salah yesterday.
Yeah,
and I think that was good. And again, you know, he misses a couple of games, and maybe they just need a rest. And I've always caveated what I've said about Salah is, and you know, you'll take some stick for any criticism of Liverpool players at the moment. I'm not criticising him. I'm just saying, he's not Mo Salah at the moment. However, when he came off the bench yesterday, he did look like Mo Salah, and that is also good news. So if Fabinho has the same effect from having a break that Salah's maybe had, great. We need fresh footballers, because Real Madrid have had nothing to do for a few weeks. that could work in our favour, by the way.
I think the only thing with Salah is that in recent fixtures, like, you have kind of lost confidence, whether it's when he's starting or whether he comes off the bench, that he just has that kind of superhuman ability to just make things happen and to do the impossible and to make miracles happen. And I think that yesterday it felt like that was back. And I feel like, having had that moment and celebrated it like it meant everything that he thought it was going to mean, he's going to want to do that again in a situation where he has total control, where it doesn't matter what else is happening elsewhere in the world. Whatever he does on that pitch decides our fortune, and it's him that gets to do that.
And Sadio Mane is just currently magnificent. I thought Wolves were the first side I've seen who felt like they had a little bit of a Diaz plan. I don't think it works perfectly for them. You know, I think he still gets in a number of times and still is able to hurt them. But no one can really live with Sadio Mane at the minute. They try to do, whatever your Sadio Mane plan is, Sadio Mane's got a solution for it.
Yeah, the equalising goal, which is massive in the context of that game, because if it doesn't happen, you think, shit, we could have got to half time behind and they've just been pain, lumped on top of pain. Mm. It's actually, I mean, although all the focus was on Thiago's assist, which is, you know, quietly one of the most delicious assists of the season.
Beautiful.
But you watch that goal back, he's got a lot to do still. Mm. You know, he's not, he puts on the burners in a way you forget how quick he is. Puts on the burners while keeping control of the situation, still having the composure to slot in the most ridiculously pressurised situation. He is fantastic. I think the Diaz plan, by the way, in a way, the Jota problem is enables them to have a Diaz plan, because I kept looking over and going, Jota, why are you so fucking narrow? Mm. Diogo Jota wants to play as a central striker, and he's not really having it any other way, quite frankly. All his instincts are to get between the posts. So he felt to me like he was always within 8 yards of Sadio Mane. So we were playing an old-fashioned 4-3-3. Old-fashioned 4-3-3 from the 70s and 80s, where you had a winger and two central strikers, mm-hmm. not the modern 4-3-3, which is a central striker and two wingers. Mane and Jota were central strikers. We had nothing on the right. Trent was very isolated. There was no run for him. So he was always just having to whip percentage balls in with nothing happening. But this then enabled Wolves to funnel over and have a Diaz plan, whether they liked it or not. They just had extra bodies to deal with him with. And that, for me, is a problem with Jota. Jota's a great option in the middle. But now there's Sadio Mane's at the front of that pecking order in the middle. And then Bobby Firmino and Jota vying for it. And we have Diaz's cover on the left, or to interchange with Sadio. But we don't really have a plan on the right, a good plan for when we want to rest Mo or take him off. That's a small concern.
Maybe Carvalho might be that plan for next season. But yeah. On Mane, the way he's reinvented himself again, by the way.
How many goals he finished with? A load.
I'm not sure, but his second half of the season is unbelievable. Since he becomes our number nine, I can't believe the level he's found.
But to go back to the thing, last 19 games of the season, 1-16 drawn, 3 lost, 0. Sadio Mane's up front for most of them.
Yeah.
I think he's the best player in the world at the moment, Sadio Mane. I think there's Ballon d'Or winners at the club, and everyone talks about Salah. It's unreal what Mane is doing at the moment, and if it's his crown and glory in Paris, there has to be a conversation around it. And for me, there has to be equal conversation around him and the contract that we're hearing around Salah. Yeah. I don't know if it's easier to get done. I don't know if there's just a sort of agreement within the club that it gets done or whatever. But I'm panicking as much, yeah. You know, about Mane, because his performance at the moment is wow. He arrives at Liverpool and plays on the right. Salah arrives, he gets moved to the left. Diaz arrives, and now he's in the middle. The level he finds to be moved around and almost just be happy to move around. It's unbelievable what he's doing. So important to this football club. So important to this football club next season. Yeah, must sign a contract.
If he is our penalty taker, I think he more or less would have got the golden boot.
Yeah.
He's give or take a goal. Or let's put it this way, he's within a couple of goals of the golden boot if he was our penalty taker.
He's underappreciated and undervalued, not by Liverpool fans and not by the club, but I think by other football fans and by kind of sport media at large, because I find it absolutely wild that we don't have the kind of conversations that broader sport media has about Salah, about Mane.
I must say, I did feel when he was playing left side that he was in decline earlier on in the season. And then since the arrival of Diaz, and I don't know if Diaz helps him, but since he's been through the middle, it's a new level for Sadio, I think.
Quickly on Carvalho signing, it feels like it's happened three times. There was back in January when it looked like it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Then there was the day after January when everyone said it happened. Then there was about another period about 2 months ago when everyone said this is confirmed, but then it's actually been formally confirmed today that he will sign for Liverpool on July the 1st.
Breaking.
Breaking today. Formally confirmed he will sign on July the 1st. Feel as though he, you know, without sort of removing people quite sort of cheaply, glibly, I think he probably ends up replacing Oxlade-Chamberlain within the squad. I think that's a likely sort of outcome. It's Liverpool do need a bit of a solution to what happens on the right-hand side in attack. They could possibly do with another option in the middle of the park, because it looks like that's not been Chamberlain over the course of the campaign. That it feels like, and I could be wrong, and Alex, if you're listening, I apologise, but it feels as though the manager's drawn that conclusion. Mm. Carvalho is a young, exciting prospect who looks hugely talented, and it's an excellent goal return from him in what's a pretty aggressive, physically aggressive league, the Championship.
Yeah, he's one of, I don't know, the top three players in that league as a 19-year-old. That's really, really impressive. It's really hard to know exactly what Liverpool's plan will be for him. I presume we're going to get a Klopp press conference comment on this at some stage if he's just signed.
I think we're only going to see it in pre-season. I think we're not going to know what the plan is until you see him playing three pre-season friendlies, and it'll be, oh, that's the position.
And he's playing them centre mid.
Number six.
This is it. Mad.
But, well, Klopp does something when he welcomes a new player, and I hope we get some quotes this week on. He does tend to go, oh, we signed him because he can play all the positions in the front three, blah, blah, blah. I'm hoping there's some in there, but I can't tell whether he's going to play. Liverpool could have a plan for him as a front three player, or they could very much have a plan for him as a number eight. I mean, he played predominantly as a 10 in a 4-2-3-1 for Fulham. We don't play that way, but it does suggest that he could. I don't know, and maybe Klopp wants that option. I can't tell. What's more interesting is how many games they've told that boy he's going to get, because he's come from playing every single week. He could have had his pick of the teams in the second half, the bottom half of the Premier League, and played every game next season, or got himself 25-30 games. Is he going to be sated by four starts and six in the cups? I don't think so. I think he's possibly been promised more, which is interesting.
You've got crowns to defend them. That's the other thing as well. You want to retain the League Cup, you want to retain the FA Cup. We've got the squad, and especially with five subs next season, you've got the ability to rotate that a little bit more. It was interesting to hear Pep so excited about it yesterday, about five subs. That's what he was saying in quite an arrogant way. So, do you want to see my genius? Look at what I do with five subs next season. Well, I think squad depth, mate. I think you'll see that Liverpool have got a bit more to play with. I think we are quietly building a very bright future with young players. You see, Curtis Jones has stepped up over the last few weeks. Harvey Elliott put a decent performance in the week. Carvalho's here. Kanate is young. Joe Gomez is still here and still a pretty young footballer. Trent, obviously young. There's kids coming through. The future's definitely bright. There's still to be immediate Tchouaméni chat come out after that Champions League final. I'm pretty certain you'll find out his future almost in
the immediate... Going to ruin my transfer game here, Liverpool.
I think he'll be done. Immediate aftermath. Go and have your holiday. And then let Rob go to Portugal and have some peace.
You know? listen, don't you talk, someone gut us away.
I'm sorry,
mate.
Gut
us away. They're a crucial part of the whole offering. We're going to win in Paris.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I'm so bullet. The closer we get, the more the nerves will begin to rattle. But I mean, I felt when I was sort of posed this question, I don't know, by friends and maybe on a show, so I think we're going to properly smash them. Well, let's put it this way. I think we have it in us to properly smash them, and I'd like to see us do it.
I can't say sentences like that. I'm superstitious.
I'm not worried about jinxing anymore. I booked my tickets before we even qualified for the final, so I'm way out the jinx box.
I can make my peace more and see a much more realistic, anxious evening for myself of one early goal and then a very long wait of me chewing off every single fingernail I've got until another goal comes.
We're playing a much better opposition than I think some of our fans are giving credit for. They are Real Madrid. They've got a special history with the competition. I do feel we are better. You know, I think we are better with our first 11 out. I hope that we have our first 11 out. They've got some outstanding footballers that maybe some of our fans haven't watched.
They've got what they've got, Paul, and this is where what concerns me about them, and this is back to why we've got to take our chances, is they've actually ended up, and I don't think it's a grand plan, but with this really intriguing balance of genuine, astonishing experience on the one hand, and some really exciting young players on the other. So players like Camavinga and Rodrigo are
Vinicius.
Vinicius are really, really exciting footballers who've got the guidance of footballers like Benzema, who's had a great season,
Luka
obviously.
Luka Modric,
Casemiro. And that's my... I think they are exceptional. I think part of what's made them dangerous over the course of the season when they've come up against other sides, and we've seen what they've done to Paris Saint-Germain and Chelsea and Manchester City, is they've had the ability to just harness that in key moments. And that's what concerns me. We've got to take our chances when we have them.
They've got some amazing role models at the club. I mean, I think this year Marcelo became the most successful player in Real Madrid history. Now that is some feat.
Yeah.
Think about it. I think it was Ganzo, I think his name was, that I think he died this year, who was the previous most successful player in the club's history. Real Madrid are a force. Ancelotti, I've never had Ancelotti down as a tactician or whatever. They were a bit of a mess. Both Spanish clubs were a bit of a mess. And now they certainly aren't. And he's somehow harnessed the good feeling of, as you say, the experienced heads they're wanting to help, the ultimately brilliant young footballers that they've got there. Rodrigo's in amazing form. Vinicius is, you know, a feat of speed, technical ability. He's got everything. You know, we're in some game, and I think we just need to be calm and not arrogant going into this final, because it is a final. It's always 50-50. They're a really good team. However, do I fancy us in Paris? Absolutely.
The truth is, they're probably quite similar to Tottenham and Chelsea as their level. And Tottenham and Chelsea gave us... Well, I've watched most of those games involving Real Madrid, and in virtually all of them, they've been smashed all over the park.
Mm-hmm.
And because you rightly say, but chances weren't taken at key moments, or marginal calls. Chelsea were quite unfortunate with some line calls, really. No, they were offside, but on another day, it just go, you know.
Rob, there's no doubt in my mind, the best two clubs in the world are Manchester City and Liverpool.
Yeah.
Go and beat them on the day, though. We've got to turn up on the day.
Any on the day. Yeah, that's the problem. It. So this is the problem. Tottenham aren't nearly as good as us, but they're good, right? And on their day, in a final, if we were playing Tottenham in Paris... Juiced up Tottenham having won seven of their last 10, or they're playing well recently. They'll give us one hell of a game. And
absolutely,
although I think we could beat them well, I'd expect Chelsea are nowhere near us, 18 points adrift. But look at the game they were able to give us. So you can know you're much better, but it doesn't mean you're going to win. And I don't think we need to exalt Real Madrid. I think they are very good, but I'm not sure if we do exalt foreign players who aren't in our league that little bit more. If Chelsea were in Spain and had just won the Spanish league, which they could possibly have won. By the way, you can look at Kai Havertz. Oh, Lukaku's such a threat. Those goals he scored in the Barcelona game recently, or something like, you know what I mean. The context is that they are very good, Real Madrid. They do have all those threats, but I'm not scared of Real Madrid in any way, shape or form. Of course, we could lose 2-0 or 3-0 to them. I mean, we lost 3-1 to them away last season when we were much better than them anyway. But
You excited?
Yeah, I'm really excited.
I'm buzzing.
You excited?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine not having this. It's such a tonic to what happened yesterday, isn't it? You know, that's so hard to take what we went through yesterday, and I'm sure everyone listening to the show and whatever has taken it in different ways. But Paris is so important. And don't get me wrong, the league is so, so big. We've won it 19 times. There's not many clubs that are anywhere near our record in Europe, and to go to seven European Cups, that it should be all about that. It will be magnificent.
There's a precedent in Liverpool history for this situation, and I hope it repeats itself in a certain sense. There's only one other time I think you could say Liverpool had fought a magnificent season on the verge of true greatness, and they were pipped just before the post, but then picked themselves up to complete the season in style. And that was 1977, when Liverpool were going for a historic treble of FA Cup, League and European Cup. Had pissed the league, well, had won the league convincingly enough. FA Cup, Man United pipped Liverpool 2-1. They're absolutely on the floor, but picked themselves up to go and win the first European Cup in Rome. And I kind of hear echoes of it. And I think the reason it's important, not just for like a nostalgic, coincidental parallel, I just think psychologically that sense of being robbed of being on the edge of greatness, I think they can summon that. I feel it as a fan. I think, fuck all of you. You took that away from us, but watch us in Paris. I feel that. If I feel that a little bit, I think they can do that more than a little bit.
You excited?
I'm very excited. Yeah. I'm very excitable in general. Yesterday went...
Spaniel.
The, you know, without being too... yesterday, Wednesday, I thought it would go in the grand scheme, if you know what I mean. Like, I always felt it was there as a chance. And I think sometimes you've just got to almost imagine goals going in a different order and feel better about the world, if you know what I mean. But Paris is the one. I think the idea of they win three trophies, City win one. I still think right now Pep Guardiola to swap places with us.
You said it yesterday, and when you said it on the podcast, I went, yeah, you know, actually, I do agree with that.
Right now, he would swap places with us.
There's nothing bigger than winning the European Cup. Nothing. I don't care what you do in the league. Winning the European Cup is the biggest thing. However, if you finish fifth in the league and you've had a bit of a nightmare season, you go, oh, it's a cup competition, anyone can win it. You know, Monaco, Porto, final, whatever. The season we've had, if Liverpool win the European Cup, they're the best team in the world and they've got their crown in glory.
That's it. Crown the best team in the world next Saturday. It is the Anfield Wrap. Download the app. Enjoy the journey with us, every last bit of it. We leave for Paris on Wednesday at 11 p.m. That is the time that we go to Paris, all very, very early indeed, just to get the terrain feedback to you, what it's like, what's going on with the ups, the downs, help you with the battle plans, you know what I mean. It's all going to happen in Paris because Liverpool are going to win the European Cup.
Sports Social Podcast Network.